Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to your DenverBroncos.com podcast. With you, we have Ben Swanson, myself, and Andrew Mason.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling much better than I was about 72 hours ago.
I mean, good gracious. You came in here right before you, I guess you eventually had this appendectomy?
Yeah. I was out on the practice field during Monday's OTA, and I remember standing there, and I was kind of, I was walking back and forth, and I was talking with our director of digital media, Ben Hunt, and I actually apologized to him because I said, hey, feel a bit more comfortable if I walk back and forth because I was in so much pain that I couldn't just stand there. And so I'd take two steps forward, two steps back. And that was when I knew it was getting bad. And then I just got back in, wrote the story. And my wife's a doctor. I text her what's going on. She's like, you need to go get that checked out. So as soon as I filed the OTA takeaways from Monday, I was on my way to a walk-in clinic. About 30 minutes later, they said, you better go to the ER. And I'll tell you, laparoscopic surgery, miracle of medicine and science, because with that procedure, I'm sitting back here at Dove Valley on Thursday working, and
I hope you know.
I felt well enough to do it, and I was able to, from the time I checked into the ER to being discharged, wasn't even 24 hours.
Well, we're glad to have you
back.
Thank you.
It's good to be back. Little bit scary, but, I was in good hands. I was actually at the same hospital where Monte Ball had his appendectomy last summer.
Now you've bonded.
Yeah, and it's we're in the club. One out of every 15 people has their appendix removed. I learned that this week.
Me, not yet. But isn't it great having people who have, who work in the medical field?
Oh, yes.
Well, this was about a month or two ago, and me and my girlfriend were going up to Buena Vista, which is, for those who aren't aware, is about 2.5 hours, something like that, southwest, more west than south, I think. Mm-hmm. And the night before we were leaving, I was here at the facility, and I was doing a little workout. And I was pretty sore after it, but it was like a good sore. And I go home, and we're sitting in the living room, and my right arm is my forearm's starting to swell up. And naturally, her first instinct is to look up the symptoms. Mm-hmm. And naturally, that leads you to, oh my God, you could have your arm amputated.
Oh yeah, you go on WebMD, there's all, and you see the symptoms. You can come up with a worst case scenario pretty quick on anything, even the slightest things. My wife, a doctor, it drives her a bit insane because people look at those. And of course, they all think worst case, little things like, oh my God, I've got cancer or something like that. And, a lot of the time, sometimes you're going to get really sick, but, a lot of times it's not that.
Yeah. It some swelling, and the major concern was that it's some kind of thing where if you're working out and you're doing a lot of low weight reps or something, mm-hmm. and you're doing all this weight and you're just damaging your tissue and it just kind of just swells up.
Oh, wow.
And it's some kind of, it's a really dangerous thing, but I wasn't doing a lot of reps. I'm not, if you ever see me, I'm not exactly a bulky gym rat. and I don't think I've really been in the gym a whole lot since. But this was our weekend off. We were going to go out to this getaway and I was it'll be fine, I was whatever. And so we make it out there, and it's still having the same kind of thing. And so my mom's a physical therapist. Her cousin, my girlfriend's cousin, is a nurse. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend's mother is a nurse, an OBGYN. And so we're texting all of them what the symptoms are. Mm-hmm. It was just I just had a really sore muscle or a strain. It was a strain or something. So it was fine, but always nice to have those people who were there just be like, nah, you can kind of relax as, mm-hmm. No big deal. Just take it easy.
Yeah, it was interesting. My wife goes between bunch of different hospitals, and I just I text her. I said, "Okay, where? What hospital are you at?" And she said where she was, and I just drove. I just drove right over. And it was rather nice because she was there, but she was in on an in-house call, but she wasn't busy at that moment. She just came down to the waiting room and sat with me for a bit, and then it was actually, once I got in, it was pretty quick how it went. But then again, they treat appendectomies as emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
And
this thing could explode at any time.
Yeah, I thought of The Simpsons and Dr. Hibbert pulling out the knife and cutting the man's appendix out right there. And then he pulls it out. It's going to blow. And then he throws it off like a grenade and it explodes off in the distance. Thank you, Dr. Hibbert. Don't thank me. Think of a knife.
Oh, jeez. I think, so on today's podcast, this is, I guess, this is kind of an unplanned segment talking about this. So now we have a irreverent sandwich. So we're going to end on something that's a little bit more lighthearted. In the middle, we'll talk football. So getting down to brass tacks here, on Monday, we had our second week of OTAs begin. And as we saw, all the vets, pretty much all of them, were in kind of workout clothes, but no helmets.
Lots of ball caps, lots of visors.
Yep.
Just watching. It was interesting to watch some of them try to keep busy. I noticed Peyton Manning over off to the side working on his dropbacks and his play fakes and his handoffs. But this is something that Gary Kubiak, he did a little bit of in Houston, but he picked up more of this from his time in Baltimore, which is to give the veterans the day, a lot of key veterans the day off, and let the younger players, you know, get those first team reps. And so basically you had kind of a mix of first and second teamers out there with the ones. And, you know, it's really smart because you get extra reps for guys who need it. And, you know, certainly the fact that Baltimore has done it, I think, you know, lends further credence to it, because the Ravens have been one of the best teams in the league at developing young talent. And ideas like this, I think, are a big part of the reason why, because they're able to get those young guys out and get a glimpse of them. So, you know, Osweiler led the offense. There was a little bit done with that even the first OTA that we saw during the seven-on-seven period. They actually went on two separate fields. On one field, you had the first team with Peyton Manning, and then Zach Dysart with the third team. On the other field, you had Brock Osweiler and all the second teamers. So all those guys got extra reps, and it's clear, you know, they want to get a lot of guys some long looks. But if you're thinking of one player who this is about more than any other, it's Brock Osweiler. Getting him some extra work, getting a better gauge and a read on where he is, and getting him ready in case that he's needed. And also, frankly, I think for the Broncos, getting some more snaps on the practice field, both out here in OTAs and then when they put the pads on for training camp, and getting a broader sample size so they can make a more accurate call on whether to give him a contract extension, because, of course, his contract expires after this year and there's a lot of questions about whether he's going to be back or not. The Broncos have put a lot of time in Osweiler's development. Now they're putting even more emphasis on it. I think what he does out here, and then when they have these veteran-type days in training camp, and Kubiak did say there were going to be these days in camp where the veterans got time off, I would actually say I hope that they're made public before they happen, because otherwise you're going to have a lot of disappointed fans who come out to the hillside and don't see Peyton Manning and Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware and everybody else. But they are good for the team.
Yeah. And Brock has been the guy who has had some confidence by the organization put in him, especially recently.
Yeah.
Didn't get a whole lot of snaps last year in game time. You know, there was that famous meme where I think there was a Vine where Brock thought he was going out, got pulled back in. Peyton wanted to go back another time. But people thought they would be drafting a quarterback in this past draft. And
well, they did. They waited. Yeah.
But yeah, some people thought that it would be in the first three or four rounds, and they waited till the seventh to get Trevor Siemian out of Northwestern. So I think they want to see what else he can put out there. A lot of potential they still think he has.
Yeah, and you know, certainly wondering how he's going to do in this offense now. Some aspects of it, like the rollouts and bootlegs and so forth, really fit Osweiler's ability to get out in space and make some plays with his feet. But the flip side of that is, as he mentioned on Monday, he hasn't operated under center on a full-time basis since he was playing peewee ball. So he's got to get used to seeing the game from under center rather than in the shotgun, because when he was at Arizona State, they did a lot of spread type stuff formationally. So it's an adjustment for him. I mean, and there were some hiccups. He had a fumbled snap exchange with Gino Gradkowski during practice. He had a pass that got intercepted by Todd Davis, but he also made some nice throws as well. You know, and also Osweiler gets more reps. Zach Dicer gets more reps, and you know, you mentioned Trevor Siemian in the 7th round pick this year, but they want to get a look at Zach Dicer and see where he is. 7th round pick in 2013, practice squad last year, because when you look at constructing the roster, 53-man plus the practice squad, you know, there's questions. Are you going to be able to keep 4 quarterbacks, 3 on the 53, 1 in the practice squad? Are you going to have to let one go in order to make room? And if that's the case, then you really got to have a good evaluation on Zach Dicer. And then Trevor Siemian, as he gets healthy, he saw some 7-on-7 reps on Monday, so he's working his way back from the torn ACL.
Going to the backfield, we had an article on the site by one of our new contributors or correspondents, Allie Raymond, who talked to Monte Ball, and there's obviously going to be a running back competition there, pretty crowded in the backfield. Coach Kubiak said that CJ came into the offseason as the number one back, but he and Monte are kind of splitting reps back there in the first team. I think they, you know, Monte didn't really get the best shot he could have had with that, moving from an appendectomy into a,
groin injury. And he actually first tweaked his groin in week one. He later admitted and said, yeah, I didn't tell the trainers about it. And then he had the significant groin injury, against Arizona
and then
in week
five.
And then he did aggravated against St. Louis when he came back. You'd certainly say that C.J. Anderson's got the pole position, but, you know, what would they like to have? Well, let's just take a look at some of Gary Kubiak's offenses over the years. Now, he had, you know, one bell cow type back last year with Justin Forsett having the big season. But look at what he did in Houston when he had Arian Foster and Ben Tate.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you could get that kind of 1-2 punch at running back, that would probably be the best situation to keep both backs fresh. And also because, given the attrition at the position, you know you're going to need your backup running backs at some point. And, you know, just look at the Broncos last year, you know, with Monte Ball getting injured, Ronnie Hillman getting injured, and end up being on C.J. Anderson by the end of the season. So you want to have guys ready. You want to do everything you can to keep them fresh. And if you can go into the season with a 1A and 1B, that might be the best scenario. And certainly if you're looking at the running backs, you'd say C.J. Anderson and Monte Ball have to be the 1A and the 1B. Anderson atop because he is coming off the Pro Bowl season. He was very productive late last year. But certainly Monte Ball, I think, if he's he's healthy. And really last year, the injury woes that he had, the illness/injury because he had the appendectomy, those were the first real health issues he's had since high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at Wisconsin, he was basically a block of iron. You know, extremely durable.
Iron.
Yeah. Yes. Go back to the off-season theme there. He didn't miss time at all. And so I think now, you know, he's learned some things from last year. And he's probably going to be reliable. And I think this offense probably fits his skill set better than what the Broncos were doing. Again, he grew up a Broncos fan. He understands the principles of zone blocking. He understands the one cut and go philosophy, and how to be patient, wait for that hole, and then quickly accelerate. I think he can be a good fit. And of course, you know, Ronnie Hillman has some experience. And Juwan Thompson, who's, as C.J. Anderson mentioned Thursday, is not working at fullback, is working at tailback.
Mm-hmm.
I think Juwan Thompson's had some very nice runs from the practices that we've seen so far in OTAs. I think he's going to have something to say as well, and his skill set probably fits very well what the Broncos want to do.
I mean, he's shown a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about how he had the longest run of any back for the Broncos last year, but even going back to preseason and into training camp of 2014, he showed a lot that I think a lot of people kind of bought into him as definitely a back that you could see a lot more of. Mm-hmm. And he eventually became that as kind of like the third back, and at some points maybe a number two while some injuries hit during the season.
And he, you know, we know that his size makes him a potential goal line back, but the thing that stands out to me, he's hard to tackle. He makes guys miss in the open field. I think back to the San Francisco preseason game when he's shedding guys in the flat, and he's a good pass catcher out of the backfield. Just an awful lot to like about him. You know, I look at running back and I see one of the deepest positions on the team. And that isn't even mentioning Capri Bibbs, who I know has had some moments of his own in OTAs, and I know that running backs coach Eric Studisville is awfully high on. You know, the running back was probably just about the least of the needs heading into the draft, and of course, you know, the Broncos, you know, really seemed content to kind of to stand pat with what they had, and with good reason with all these guys. But again, with the attrition of the position, you know, somebody or somebodies are going to get hurt.
Right. As we finish up our only football segment of the podcast, recent reports that hit Deadspin and the Denver Post first. Nikki Javala, a fellow Tar Heel, I might add, got this scoop from the Taste of the Broncos sample session on Wednesday. Von Miller was chatting, and he talked about a certain policy the players have enacted in which you get fined for farting during team meetings.
You know what?
I think that's
as old as time. I mean, baseball teams have had kangaroo courts for a long time. If a guy farted in the clubhouse, you know, if they were, you know, five or ten.
On the one hand, it's a bodily function. On the other hand, you're all trapped in a small room watching film, and you can't leave.
But as Von Miller said, you know, I keep trying to tell them it's not healthy if I sit there and hold it in. And
does science back this up? I haven't really done any research.
I think it does. It's, you know, it's
probably not good. It doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good. It's not good for your lower GI tract to hold it in. I mean, I'll warn you right now, we're here in a confined space, a small room doing this podcast, and I'm coming off of a lower GI surgery, and I'm going to warn you, if the temptation, if the urge arises, I'm letting it fly.
I can't blame you for that.
I don't blame Von.
I was thinking of a South Park where Kenny stops farting because he has a girlfriend and then spontaneously combusts. So that's the most scientific thing I could find, but I'm sure there's...
Keeping in the methane, I suppose, you know.
But Von said, you know, he just can't help it, and who can blame him? I mean...
It's all that water he's drinking, right? He's drinking
it's again. Probably having a healthy diet, yeah. I think, probably just makes the gears move a little bit...
gallon of water a day, I think he mentioned earlier. I mean,
lot of water.
Yeah, his system is flowing.
That reminds me of I know you have a story you're dying to tell. We'll get to that in a second, but the water thing reminds me of this post I saw. This Kickstarter is kind of being derided, and basically it's just like a water bottle that connects with your phone and tells you how much water you've been drinking. Mm-hmm. And tells you when, like, it flashes to remind you to drink water, and it's just like,
I could use that.
I mean, we could use it, but at the same time, it's kind of not the most necessary thing.
Yeah, but sometimes you forget, and
yeah, I guess
I can tell you just when I,
especially if you're an athlete,
when I do remember to drink enough water, I feel the difference, and then on a day where I get only like 20 ounces of water compared to say 80, I notice an impact, but sometimes it's hard to remember that you're going out and about. I mean, let's say you're going to, you know, it's Friday night. You're out with friends. It's hard to remember sometimes to have some water mixed in with, you know.
Yeah, but you're not taking you're not taking this cup with you to the bar.
Well, no, but I mean,
maybe you are.
That's the thing is it's attached to a cup, and maybe the better thing is to track it and remember. But then you have to remember to track it and all that. So
it strikes me as one of those smart fitness things that just...
Now, I do have a flatulence story.
Let's hear it.
That's tied to the
Broncos. This is what the podcast was made for.
Yes. 2002. It's in Kansas City, and at the time in Kansas City, we'd go in, the buses would pull up to the terminal, we'd go into the terminal, and then we'd go through the jetway. And I recall standing behind some offensive linemen and tight ends waiting to get on the plane. And I'm going to protect this player. I'm going to leave him nameless.
This goes with our other protected player who listens to, what was it, Celine Dion?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Different players, I hope.
He knows, he probably may know who he is. Probably may know, if that makes any sense. But we're standing there. We're in the jetway and just lets a tremendous fart rip. And everyone, I think it probably...
You were outside of the jet.
We were outside the jet, in the jetway, the confined... Okay. Yeah. And it definitely got about 20 or 22 guys back in line. It was strong.
You could start hearing people...
Yeah,
perk
up.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow. And
better than on the jet, though.
On the jet, though,
it's ventilated.
Presumably you've got the air flowing
moving.
And there's circulation. It was, you know, there wasn't any air circulation in this jetway. There was nowhere for the methane and the odor to go. And it was nasty. I mean, now that being said, everyone could kind of laugh about it. Because it was the day of a 37-34 Broncos win at Arrowhead Stadium. Shannon Sharp has career high. If Shannon Sharp had done the farting, he didn't. I'm not gonna say who did, but Shannon Sharp didn't.
We can rule him out.
If he had done it, I think everyone would have excused him after having a career day that day. Keith Burns had a block punt, I think everyone would have excused him, but as I recall, the guy who didn't...
You hold in the farts.
Right.
So you have
didn't
a
have a great
game.
Day. And, you know, I think everyone was ready to give him a little grief. But it was something that you could laugh about, having what at the time was a rare win in Kansas City. I mean, you know, Broncos fans savor the fact that your team has won its last four trips to Kansas City. Because back in those days, it seemed like the Broncos never won at Arrowhead. Mm. That was a rare treat. And I will probably remember the fart more than the win.
At some point, I'll have to tell my story about competitive eating burritos. I'm sure we'll get to that. People eat, offensive linemen especially eat. So I'm sure we'll have some kind of story with the nutritionist, and then that'll spark my memory, and I'll tell that story eventually. But I don't think it's the right time.
Isn't the key to like with we see at the hot dog competitions to dip everything in water so it just slides right down?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really take a whole lot of advice going into it, so it didn't go well for me, nor did it go well for many of these other people.
Here's we got Taste of the Broncos coming up here in a couple of weeks, or less than a couple of weeks. The challenge, someone's going to take the challenge of trying to eat at all, I think, 30 stations?
Yeah, it's like 30 restaurants or something.
Yes, someone's going to take the challenge of trying to have something.
They're small,
everything. They're
like sliders. I think they'll be like more like bite-sized, but yeah, someone's going
to... That's still a lot of food. When you get to 30 restaurants, it adds up. Someone's going to try to do that.
It's like tapas. You get like 10 for a group of three or something.
Sure.
And you're like, okay, that's good, but 30, whew, that's a challenge.
That's a lot.
You got a lot of time. I think it's like a 4-hour kind of thing. You know,
so you graze and you pace yourself.
There's the symphony is going to be there, the Colorado Symphony. The players will be conducting.
Now,
you got some time to kind
if
of.
If they're sliders, do you have to eat the bread?
No, but then you're
count.
Not getting the whole thing.
Okay, exactly. So you've got to eat the bread. You've got to accept that you're going to fill. You're going to.
You're missing a
you're
key
fill,
part of the
fill
meal.
Some of your gub, some of your gut on with the carbs.
Yeah. You know, there was a. So like one of the guys who does like Sam Adams or something, he goes to these brewing festivals, beer festivals, and naturally he wants to taste all the beers. So what he does is he gets some like brewer's yeast or something, and he like mixes it in some, or he like just downs it. And so when he's drinking these beers, like I guess it activates something with the yeast, and so it kind of neutralizes it, and so you don't get as intoxicated. I'm not sure how that works, but one of my friends saw that and pointed it out to me, and I'm not exactly going to put yeast in my stomach just out of the blue, as much as I do like a nice beer, but
wow.
You know, we've got some time here. We're at about 25 minutes. I think I can tell my eating story.
Please do.
So I was in a reporting class at University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And this was a feature story. And I had read a report about a high school student taking this burrito challenge at a local place on Franklin Street. And it was like, you know, you eat the big burrito, you get your meal free, and you get a t-shirt and all this, and you get your photo on the wall. And the kid had not done so well and ended up having to go to the doctor or something. And so the report was that his parents were going to sue the restaurant. Now, the investigative journalist that I was, I went down to the courthouse and I couldn't find anything against the guy. So I called him up and he's like, no, they're not going to do it. They were just like trying to threaten me. And so what was initially a reporting story about some kind of burrito gone bad became a, well, I should try it. You know, why did this guy get sick from it?
Yeah.
this is a bad idea, but a very college...
Participatory journalism.
Yes, exactly. And so I was like, okay, I'll do this. And I failed, but I wanted to get, like, some help. And so I had a friend who lived in New York at the time, and she was at this event that Kobayashi was at. And I had been trying to contact him through his interpreter or translator. I think interpreter is the term. Anyway, so she was like, oh, I'm at this event. Like, you know, what do you want to ask? And now she's working for the Astros with social media, I think, now. So I sent her my questions. And they didn't get back to me until like a week after I attempted the burrito. And my burrito attempt went very poorly as well. In fact, it... at one point, I just got like this big bite of guacamole, and I was just like, "That's it. I can't swallow this." And truth be told, I'm sorry to Banditos, but not a burrito. It was just like a tortilla and a bunch of stuff packed into it: chicken, fajita steak.
Was it rolled?
It was just flopped over.
It's not a burrito.
Not a burrito.
It's not a burrito. You have
not a burrito.
It has to be rolled to be a burrito. This is very
clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's. Very, it's
you
in the definition.
You flop it over, and maybe you can call it a soft taco. Maybe.
It was the biggest taco I've ever seen.
Yes.
It was very big, and they definitely should have, you know, you definitely earned that t-shirt and photo if you do it. And I did not get the t-shirt. I didn't get the photo. I got a great story out of it, though. My roommate, who I didn't really know very well, I was telling him about it, and he's like, oh, yeah, I knew this guy in high school, like, he ate that thing like every week. He was a swimmer, and so, you know, swimmers have eaten tons and tons of calories. And he's like, yeah, that guy like took that thing down like all the time. I called the store. I called the restaurant's owner. He's like, no, that's never happened. And I was like, I don't believe my roommate's lying to me. So I talked to my roommate again. He was like, well, the only thing is you can't get in touch with him. He's now in like Brazil, he just lives there and he's off the grid.
After having all that food, maybe that's why. Did you read about Nick Hardwick and like he talked about like what he ate?
No.
To keep his weight up. Of course, Nick Hardwick, the former Chargers center, he retired this past winter. And when he had his retirement press conference, he walked into the room, he stunned everybody because he lost 85 pounds from his playing weight. And when he knew that he wasn't going to be able to make it back from injuries, he started losing the weight right away. So he walked in for the press conference, and most of the media had not seen him, and there were audible gasps. People were shocked. Anyway, so this week there was a story about Hardwick and like what he ate, and I'm actually reading it was to the MMQB, to Emily Kaplan, said this is what he had every day. at 4:45 a.m., a 600-calorie protein shake and a 20-gram protein bar.
Ooh.
After working out, a 300-calorie Gatorade protein shake. A large, quote, everything imaginable, unquote, smoothie after showering, which include 5 eggs, sausage, and 32 ounces of whole milk. Sausage in the smoothie.
That is so much protein already.
Oh, we're only at breakfast.
Oh, my goodness.
A snack of mixed nuts while watching film. 2 or 3 hours in the meetings, another 700-calorie protein shake. After practice, another protein shake. For lunch, a salad with, quote, as much protein as possible piled on top, unquote, and a lot of bread on the side. A normal dinner with normal portions with his family. About 90
now,
minutes.
Now, how is he going to make up for that?
Well, this is where it gets 90 minutes after dinner, a 32-ounce container of Greek yogurt with cereal on top, and finally, a pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream.
Jeez.
1,040 calories and 104 grams of sugar.
Now,
and that's what he had to keep his weight up.
Now, I'm no prototypical offensive lineman size, but I just feel like that would be really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You have to, like...
force yourself to eat.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I mean, you can probably get your body used to anything, but oh, my goodness. Jeez. I mean, that, you know, that's, frankly, it's frightening. And so to get that now... to get down and have the quick weight loss, if you'll pardon me, I'm just thinking of this from memory here from what I read of the story. I'm actually looking up the link right now. But to lose the weight, he scaled back his portions.
Mm-hmm.
Scaled back to like a lot of salads.
What was his injury?
Gosh, he had 2 or 3 injuries.
I'll look it up real quick.
I don't know what the final one was, but he'd...
I'll say if you're injured and out for the season, you're not going to be doing a whole lot of exercise to kind of...
Well, Tom Nalen, who was here when he knew in 2008 that he wasn't going to return that season, he started losing his weight pretty quickly after he knew that he wasn't ever going to play pro football again, with Hardwick, I mean Hardwick's
had a neck injury.
Yeah, Hardwick said that the build that he had when he was playing football wasn't natural. So when he realized he could start losing weight, Hardwick said he tried fasting at first, four meals one day, 2 meals the next, then 3, then 1, and he lost 15 pounds his first week and a half.
Whew.
He eliminated carbs and then took like what he called a paleo-ish, quote-unquote, diet. Whole foods and as much organic as reasonably possible without being a pain in the ass, his words.
Now, I used to work at Whole Foods. I definitely know the people who can be pains.
And then he said after he took himself off the intermittent fasting, brought back carbs, but then... had then structured carb intake around workouts, so he would have his carbs after he went to the gym. So he said had a lot of meals that were big salad with a lean meat, some almond butter, some mustard oil, mm-hmm. balsamic vinaigrette, and hot sauce on the salad. I've actually started putting salsa on my salad, as opposed to dressing. So I'm trying to lose weight myself, but for different reasons. And the other thing Hardwick began doing, walking 5 or 6 miles a day.
Good for him.
Would do jumping jacks in his in-laws' driveway. Said he challenged people to a burpee competition in his basement.
I imagine he'd be doing a lot of low impact kind of cardio. I feel like you've had enough impact exercise as an offensive lineman.
But a lot of these play like a lot of time these players will be told the bigger guys especially, if you're going to lose the weight, do it. Your best chance is to do it right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Cooper, when he came back here to visit, you know, he looked great. He lost a lot of weight.
Seen him on the sidelines a little bit.
Yes, doing that right after his career. So
now he's just really tall.
Yeah, a lot of I mentioned Tom Nalen earlier. A lot of these guys are taking that advice to heart to lose that excess weight because you obviously need to be big to play in the NFL, but for a lot of these guys, being big isn't something that's necessarily natural. And you know, we'll see. It's interesting now that Broncos, you know, are going back to a more zone blocking based scheme. So I imagine in the next couple of years we'll see it. They have the smallest offensive line in the league, small being relative, of course.
I was an offensive lineman in high school gym. Mace is laughing because he's looking at me.
No contact.
We only had one offensive lineman.
Okay.
And
all-time blocker.
No one threw to me when I was a receiver or anything like that, or running back. So I was like, well, I'll be an offensive lineman. Why not? You got to do something. I was the center.
All-time center?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's sort of like being a right fielder when you play baseball.
See, I liked being a freaking wide receiver, but I'm 5'8". I was 5'7" or something in high school. Mm-hmm. No one's throwing to that guy.
No. Sorry. Anyway,
we'll end the podcast on that. Got to get to our NBA Finals. Tough one to pick, but Warriors better team, I kind of think. But
I like the Warriors. I like the Warriors in five.
But LeBron is a force. I don't know if you can win on the back of LeBron, but you know, I think they have Kyrie Irving coming back. J.R. Smith gonna try and.
I still think the Cavs are a year away.
Well, you miss Kevin Love a lot.
Yeah, it's and even with Love,
Tristan Thompson playing
away.
Great this mm-hmm. postseason. Hopefully, he'll be able to fill in.
Someone's drought's going to end, though. I mean, it's obviously the city of Cleveland in all sports has a drought going back to 1964, and the Warriors themselves have a drought going back to 1975. Just for the Warriors. In fact, what was it? What's interesting? Oracle Arena, formerly known as the Oakland Coliseum Arena, mm-hmm. has never hosted an NBA Finals game because when the Warriors were in the finals in 1975, it was booked. They played over at the Cal Palace in San Francisco.
They had the same arena?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've rebuilt it. They've renovated
it. Right, that's what
but
I
it's
say.
The same.
No, that's a really old
it's
arena.
The, yeah, it's... Isn't it the oldest arena in the NBA now, technically?
Well, they're about to build a new
they're
one.
They're building a new one, yeah. But technically, even though it was gutted and refurbished, it is technically, I believe, the oldest arena in the NBA.
I'll take Warriors in six.
So I just it's the 2-2-1-1-1, which is why I'm going with the Warriors. Which is why I'm going with the Warriors in five. And yes, I think the Warriors will take one of two games in Cleveland. I'm going to guess game four. The Cavs will get game three. Golden State gets game four and game five.
That changes me. Yeah.
And Steph Curry lifts the trophy for the first time.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll stick with six just because that was my original instinct. But yeah, the formatting there kind of makes me rethink that.
A lot of travel, but I think it's more fair.
It's a better
format. I hated the 2-3-2 because, I mean, the theory that theoretically, if everyone held home court advantage, you'd be the team with a higher seed coming back for a do or die in game six. It always seemed unfair to me. So
yeah,
I like this better.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll catch up with y'all next week. With another week, I think we'll be getting into mini camp next
week. Camp, yes. So we'll be watching all 3 days of practice next week.
Yay.
And so plenty to talk about. You'll be able to come on DenverBroncos.com. We'll have our daily takeaways from mini camp so you can get an idea of what's going on. Of course, we'll be wrapping it up on the podcast at this time next week.